Right. Hello, everybody. We are back. Johan, hello. How are you, my friend?
Hi, Laurent. I'm very happy to be with you today for this last session.
Exactly. It's session number 4 of a series of 4 sessions. So this is the last one. This is build a custom HTTP API using Azure Functions and Cosmos DB. And it's part of the Microsoft Learn a series of live events that we are showing you. Welcome to the moderators as well. We have René and we have Chris who are going to help answer your questions. And so this is a live session, which means that we welcome questions. Even better, we want questions. We want feedback. We want to hear from you. Where are you from? What time is it for you now? But most importantly, why are you excited about serverless functions? Why are you excited about Cosmos DB? What are you using that for? What are you working on? And you know, do you even use Azure at the moment? Are you thinking of transitioning? It's a great time to migrate to Azure. We have, you know, tons of things, and you might know that we have Ignite coming up soon, so maybe you want also to log into that, but right now we are concentrating on those Azure Functions and Cosmos DB. And so this is session number 4 of a series of 4. And in session number 3 last time, we already worked with Cosmos DB. We are going to review that, but first of all, why don't you tell us a few words about Serverless September, Johan?
Sure. I would also want to add that if you're watching us on Learn TV, you can go to twitch.tv/Microsoft Developer if you want to have access to the chat so you can interact with us and ask questions and chat with us also. So this series of videos that we're doing are part also of an event called Serverless September. Through all the month of September, we're having great content all around serverless. That you can go to this URL. It's a post on Dev2 that gather all the content and that it's updated daily. So these 4 sessions are also part of this event. And if you have any question about this session or maybe the last session, if you weren't able to attend to, you can always ping us on Twitter if you have any question, any remarks. We'll be happy to help with Laurent.
Absolutely. And this content was also recorded. So if you have missed it or if you feel that we go a little bit too fast, maybe you missed something in the demo, there are multiple ways that you can catch up. You can check the recording, which we are going to put on the Microsoft Developer YouTube channel very soon. And also there is a Learn module. And so I'll show you in a moment where you can see that. Maybe the moderators can also put the Learn module in the chat. But basically, this is a place where you can really go step by step. And the cool thing with the Learn module is that you don't even need an Azure account to perform everything. You're going to get what we call a sandbox. You're going to get it for something like 4 hours. And then you can deploy your Cosmos DB. You can deploy your Azure function. You can try everything in Azure. And I see that we have now the link in the chat. So make sure to check it out as well. And we'll work into that a little bit more in the demos later. So the level for this session, just like the 3 previous sessions, beginner to intermediate, all right? We are showing you some concepts where we expect you to understand maybe what is HTTP and how do the methods work, et cetera, et cetera, maybe navigating the Azure portal. But we also explain to you and take you a little bit by the hand throughout the things. And in fact, the products that we cover, Azure portal, we are doing something in the Azure portal, something in Cloud Shell, especially in the Learn module. And so you always have a choice. So this is cool. You can decide if you prefer to work with a UI or with a shell. You can also do things with Bash. Azure Functions, of course, this is kind of the main point of this series. And we have gone through quite a lot of work explaining to you what is serverless. This was kind of in the first session compared to infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, etc. Compared to also things like web applications, app services. And we have also installed Visual Studio Code. And so that was the second session where we have gone through the whole local setup, because you can totally develop your functions locally, right, Johan? And this is really really convenient.
Yes, especially for debugging. In this session, we also started all the code and tested all the code for the API without even having to deploy anything to the cloud.
Mm-hmm. It was really, really convenient and practical. Cosmos DB, of course, this is our NoSQL database. And we saw that in the last session, in session number 3, where we talked to you about Cosmos DB, maybe a little bit compared NoSQL to SQL and, you know, the difference between both. And we really barely touched it because we used something called bindings. Can you remind us quickly what it was?
Sure, bindings are a really convenient way to communicate and data, to read data from and push data to many Azure services and even your very own custom services. So what we saw is that in a very few lines of code, you can use a declarative way to read data from our Cosmos DB instance and also write and update data to it.
Yeah, that was really cool because we created the Cosmos DB, but basically we never went to even look at it. We kind of took a look at it because it's interesting, but we don't really need to do that. We don't also need to use the SDK to interact with the Cosmos DB, which of course is always a little bit more work. I would say a little bit more lines of code. So that was quite convenient. So those are the products covered in this session. And maybe one product that we didn't really mention, but that we are going to talk about is GitHub Actions. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. It's about, I would say, continuous integration, continuous deployment, and we'll show you how you can create a GitHub action which automatically pushes changes to the Azure function. So that should be quite exciting. Prerequisite to follow this series, and that applies to the whole series, not just this session. Understanding the concepts of web development and especially using JavaScript. We are using TypeScript. It's very close to JavaScript, as you will see, with a few goodies, like, for example, you know, compile checks and these kind of things. So understanding a little bit the basics of that, being familiar with HTTP because we are building an HTTP API, so understanding a little bit what it is and what is JSON and what is get, post, and put, and delete, and those verbs, that can be useful. Understanding a little bit the Azure portal, how do you navigate it, create a new function, application, these kind of things. But again, this is something that we are guiding you to do. Visual Studio Code, the tool that we use, and also we used extensions, right, Johan? Quite a bit.
Yes, exactly. Especially as you shown in the last session when we were demonstrating bindings, it's really, and you didn't even have to go to the docs to see what was the syntax for the bindings because you could already set up everything using the Azure function extension directly from VS Code. So it's really convenient and it really helps to be more efficient when developing code.
Absolutely, it does. And like this, you don't have to remember all the syntax, like is it in, out, is it, what is it, and you're really helped. And also in the very first session, we talked quite a bit about architecture and understanding why functions, serverless function versus other things. And so if you want to understand more about that, you can also go back to the first session. In this session, we are not going to really talk about that because we have decided already on the solution that we have. And so again, right, don't hesitate to ask questions. I always forget the last prerequisite, Cosmos DB, understanding a little bit about Cosmos DB. But like we told you, it's very minimal in here because we use Cosmos DB almost as a repository for our documents. And those documents represent items, represent products. It's really very transparent to our users. So it's cool. I see that we already have some questions on the chat. So this is cool. Please continue to ask. And if you don't understand something also, feel free to let us know. Johan, do you want to run us through the back-to-school scenario and what we are implementing in this series?
Sure, I'll do a brief recap of what we were working on. So the current situation is that through this whole series, we're going to work on a solution that was for an online shop for a school supplies retailer. So for most time of the year, the server, the previous architecture that was a monolithic server that was hosting everything, the website, the database queries, and the API was working very well because the flow of user was quite constant. But when every year when it's time to the back to school season, there was major peaks in demands that were putting basically the server down because of the heavy traffic the many people that were hitting the website all at once at the same time. So what we did in the previous three sessions is migrating the old architecture to a more decoupled system. We kept the old shopping website hosted on the server, but we migrated the database and the HTTP API in the cloud using Cosmos DB and Azure Function.
Exactly. And the website that we are using is an Angular website, which in fact doesn't have any server side, right? And that's an interesting setup because it means that it's a fully static website, which is pretty cool because it means that the whole API is running as a serverless function and we don't need to maintain a server for the website, which is really a good scenario, right?
Yes, every business case, every data manipulation is done on the API. So basically, what the website do is make HTTP call to call our function API, and all the business logic happen there. So as you said, the website is just HTML and JavaScript, and there's no logic in there.
Yeah, this is very cool. And so since we are talking about the website, maybe I can quickly show it. So this is an example that we have. You see, if you know that a little bit, you will recognize that it's actually a static website URL. So really, we don't have a web server here. The whole thing is running on the client. And then when you go to products, then we hit the function. And actually, you can see that you hit, in that case, a function. This is a demo that we are showing you here. And you can totally see that if you go to the developer tools and check the network, for example, and then you will start to observe, if I refresh here, start to observe all everything which happens. So we have products here, which is an API, et cetera, et cetera. And you see that it's an XML HTTP request. So it is happening in the form of JSON, even though it's called XML HTTP request. So this is contacting our serverless product. Now, if you install, or rather I would say if you try this demo here, you won't be able to actually administrate the product because we blocked this feature, because this is for everybody to use and we don't want to risk having bad things happening here. But if you go to GitHub, you can actually get the whole code. And so our moderators can put this link in the chat. This is, well, you have everything. And so here, if you go under SRC source, right, you have the API completed. We have some starters so that you can get started in the meantime. And we also have here the application, which is the Angular website application that you can use to deploy on your own. Either your local machine will do that later in the demo, or if you want to even push it to a web server somewhere so that you can try things out. So like this, you are well equipped to try everything. All right, so in the next slide, we actually have those links, so the GitHub repository, as well as the Learn module, which we will also follow a little bit later in the demo, step by step. And in there, you really have everything from the very start, where you really create your very first function, all the way through the deployment that we are going to do now. All right, so learning objectives. Last time, we already talked a little bit about that, right? We did those bindings, right, Johan?
Yes, exactly. We went, basically, in session two, we created all the HTTP endpoints, but the data was mocked. It was static, hard-coded data that was in the server. So what we did in the last session is connect all those API to Cosmos DB so we can read and put data directly in Cosmos DB using bindings. So that's what we went through.
Yeah, no, this is really cool. And so we can take a very quick look at what we have. So as you might remember, if you have followed, I was developing inside a virtual machine. No special reason for that. It's just like this, I can have multiple environments configured. And this is the Visual Studio Code that we have. And so those functions always look the same. We have a TS file and we have a JSON file, right? Can you remind us of the difference between those two?
Sure, the TS file is the TypeScript file where you have the actual code for the API, for the function you're creating. And the function.json file is a metadata that where you can put all the information. And that's where we saw in the last session that you put all the bindings to connect your data sources from where you want to read data and where you want to output data, like in this case, Cosmos DB.
Right, so in that case, we have an out binding because this is create product. We are writing to from the function outside of the function into the Cosmos DB. In the case of get product here, we have an input binding because the data is coming from Cosmos DB into the function. And so that's an input binding. And it's all using a connection string here, which is specified here in local settings.json. And so that's important because this file is not into GitHub, which means that you don't leak your connection string into GitHub and then for the whole world to see. But it is kept here locally. And in fact, we'll see that when we deploy, we need to configure our function application, but that's really for later. So this is what we have now. We are basically already using the Cosmos DB instance using those bindings. And so the homework that we asked you to do last time was to bind, to use bindings in the update product. And if you remember, update was a function which actually updates, like the name shows, a product. And we were using the put method, HTTP method, in the contrary of creating a product where we're using the post method. I'm not going into that because we have quite a lot of things to show you, so let's move on. But basically, we are just going to assume that this is ready. Another thing I did in preparation for this session, and I'll show you that later, is that I put all my code into a repository in GitHub, because since we are going to use GitHub Actions to deploy to Azure Functions later, I already wanted to have everything into GitHub, so I did that already as a preparation, but I'm going to assume that everybody knows how to do that. All right, so learning objectives for this session. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about what we are going to do?
Sure. Now that we have basically completed our HTTP API, the next logic thing that we would like to do is to deploy it. So we'll go through all the steps to create the resource for it, to talk a bit about the different options that you have, and how to set up also continuous integration and continuous deployment pipeline using mm-hmm. GitHub Action. So you're ready to go and you're ready to push your update quite easily.
Exactly. So that's pretty cool. And then we'll talk about CORS, cores. We'll come back to that later so that we understand what it is. But this is going to be the last thing that we need to configure. And that's an interesting acronym, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. So let's talk about service plans and how you choose them, and what is even a service plan, and how do we get started with those. So why don't you explain to us a little bit what's going on when we want to create a function application in Azure?
Sure. So what we've been focused on in the previous session was basically all the code that you need to create and to represent the function, what you want to run. However, when you're moving this code to the cloud, you have to understand a bit about what's behind this Azure function and how it runs. I don't know about you, but to me, it seems like some magic. Basically, you just put the function and it's running and it's scaling automatically in the cloud. But whenever I was a kid, I always wanted to know what was behind the magic tricks whenever I saw one. So what I would like to go in the next slide is to explain a bit what's behind this Azure function magic and what's really needed to be able to run this in the cloud.
And that's what we are engineers, because we love to, I know that I have ruined a lot of electronic equipment when I was at home, because I was always opening them to understand what was going on inside as a kid. So hello, mom, if you are watching that, I'm so sorry, now I'm an engineer. Look at me. And now I can show you how to do an Azure an Azure function application. So this is cool. So what do we have for components for this application?
So basically, we have three components that make the function app. The first one is the code. That's what we have been focused on in the last session. Mm-hmm. The second one is the storage, because once you move everything to the cloud, you need storage for the code and for all the metadata that's attached to the function. Like we'll see later, you have to set up the environment variable. The thing that you showed us earlier, like for example, the connection string to the Cosmos DB, you won't put it in your code because you don't want it to leak it in your repository and have everyone being able to see it. So mm-hmm. while you have it stored locally in a file that was excluded from Git, in the last session. Now we'll see how we can put it when configuring our function app. Basically, it's a thing that you don't have to care about. It will store all the needed things to support the function, and you just need to know that it's there. You really don't want to delete it, because otherwise your function won't work, but you don't have to care about it. It's there to support the function.
And the last thing, and you could also use the storage for other things, like if you need that for other things like blobs or whatever. But here it's really not what we focus on. This storage here is really just for the code and the settings. Huh? And the last component is the service plan. Huh?
Yes, the service plan is basically what will run your function, what will allow the function to be executed and to scale. So what we'll see is that there are various options when choosing your service plan, and I explain a bit the difference about that.
Okay, so we use code as storage. The code, we focused on it right now. Storage required by the function app. Don't touch it, especially don't delete it. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
So how do we go to select a service plan? Like do I have to even worry about it? And what does it even do? What is it responsible for? I would say.
So it's responsible for many things for your function. The first thing is that it will determine how your function will scale.
Okay.
That's one of important thing, especially for our scenario here. The second thing is that it will define how the resources will be available to the function. Also, what feature that you can use. We'll see that there's small differences, especially with the call start time of the function, depending on which service plan you choose.
Okay.
So you have different service plan, and they have different features associated to them. And the final option that you have, especially, is that it will change what you will pay at the end, depending on which service plan option that you selected.
Right, and it will change not just what you pay, but also how you pay, right? I mean, in some cases, you're paying more as a it's kind of a fixed amount. Sometimes it varies a little bit, but in some cases, it's really a consumption mode. We'll talk more about that in a moment, which is more serverless, probably. And what are we going to have as available options, and how are we going to compare them, really, to choose? So what do we have?
So the first option that we have is called App Service Plan. If you already use like other Azure services like App Service, you should be familiar with that. Basically, an App Service Plan is like a fixed capacity for your function. It's mostly useful if you already have one existing, for example, if you have already deployed App Services and you have like a small workload that you want to move with your function and you want to reuse that service plan because it's a fixed cost that you pay every month, a bit like a VM, and you want maybe you have some capacity that's unused, so you want to reuse your existing service plan to run some function. But in our case, you'll see that it's not really suitable because what we were wanting is something that's able to scale. And in that case, like I said, it's a fixed capacity, so it doesn't really fit. And actually, if you're using an app service plan, it's not really serverless because it's not like an elastic infrastructure to support it. It's like, okay, it's the fixed services with a fixed capacity.
Yeah, so usually what I tell people is an app service plan for a function can be an interesting option. If you already have an app service plan, let's say you have a website and you're not using it to its capacity and you kind of want to fill the capacity with a function, why not? But I wouldn't necessarily go with it on a greenfield approach where I'm starting from zero and then I want to start. It's probably one way, but it is good to know that it is available. Consumption plan?
So this is a real serverless option this time. The consumption plan is the default plan for function. Unless you start hitting your function, the resource behind it will hibernate, meaning that you won't pay anything until you run your function actually run, and it will be able to scale as long as there's demand for your function. If like you have a peak of HTTP call that are calling your function, it will scale automatically up as needed, and once the peak is passed, it will also scale down and put all these resources to sleep, so you don't have to pay for it.
So that's kind of the real serverless way of doing functions. But you mentioned a word which kind of struck me. You mentioned the word cold start, right? Or rather, it's two words, the expression cold start. And can you maybe just quickly run us through that and why we have the third option?
Sure. So cold start is said otherwise, it's a slight delay. You have the first time you're calling a function that was like put to sleep before because you have to restart everything and the instance has to be awake. So the first time you're calling a function that was hibernated before, you are at this slight delay. And once it's warmed up, you'll see no delay and it will function as normally. And that's also why we have another plan that's called Premium. It's like the previous one, but you already have pre-warmed instances for that. So you don't have this slight delay, even if nobody is calling your code. But for that, you'll have to pay a bit more. You'll also have a bit more CPU option if you need more compute power for your code, or if you need your function to run a bit longer. So there's like, if you have specific function that goes beyond what's in the default plan, you should take a look at this premium plan.
Right, so that's quite interesting. So let's quickly review our project requirements. We already talked about it. We said that it's a back-to-school scenario. Right now in France, where you are located, in Switzerland, where I am located, it's actually back-to-school time. And so we see a lot of people buying online and the server's going crazy. So we want to be able to handle those peaks and to not crash the server. But at the same time, we also want to reduce the amount of resources that we pay for when the peak disappears, which at some point will happen, right? So this is really, it's not just about handling peaks, but really handling the fluctuations between the peaks and the lack of demand that happens sometimes. And we also want it to be cost efficient. It's one requirement of the company here that we are helping. They really want to be able to pay as they go and to be, I would say, a little bit spare, especially in the beginning, because they are moving to the cloud. They are kind of evaluating a little bit, like, how is it going to cost? What is it going to cost us? How are we going to pay, etc., etc.? So they want to start a little bit careful in the beginning with the money. So if we review what we just learned about what you told us, we see that App Service Plan is, you could say, you could configure it to scale, etc., etc., but it's, first of all, it's quite a lot of work to configure, and second of all, it's not really made for that. It's not really the main point. So if you have an app service plan which is existing and you don't worry too much about scaling up, that would be okay, but it's not really made for that. Also, cost efficient, not necessarily. Those app service plans are usually more expensive than what you would pay for functions, so it's probably not the best case. A consumption plan can handle peaks totally. And when I talk about peaks, I'm really talking about peaks, right? I mean, I have some examples where suddenly you need a million instances of a function, and we just give you a million instances of the function, and then you're going to pay, of course, accordingly for the time that those functions need to run, but the demand will be covered. Cost efficient, yes, because we really bill you, and it's a micro billing. We bill you by the second, right, for what you use. And so we are not going to exceed that. And the premium plan, premium sounds very interesting, but it's also sound a little bit more expensive, definitely can handle peaks, but it is a little bit less cost efficient than the consumption plan. So I think it makes sense that we go with the consumption plan completely, right?
Yes, exactly. And okay. I should mention also that if you want to estimate the cost because you don't, you have difficulties because, as you said, it's pay as you go, maybe you have some estimation about how long your function will run, how many calls you expect to your API. We have a calculator to help you estimate the cost of what you will pay at the end of the month.
Yeah, and we will show you that. But before we go, I want to say a quick hi to Leila and to all the viewers that she brought who are seeing our numbers fluctuate quite a bit right now. So it reminds me of an Azure function which is covering the demand here. So right now we have 90 viewers. Hello, everyone. It's great to have you here. If you have questions about what we are doing here, don't hesitate to ask our moderators in the chat. And again, right, if you're watching this on Learn TV, you can go to twitch.tv/Microsoft Developer and you can see here what we are doing and also interact with the moderators, which is quite interesting. So thanks, Leila, for bringing all those people people here. This is great to have you here. Perfect. So we talked about the pricing calculator. So why don't we take a quick look at that? So I'm going to open here a new window. And if you just type Azure, if I know how to type Azure, Azure pricing calculator, right, you will find it. And what's going to happen here is that you can open it and you're going to be able to say what your application is composed of, what it is made of. And so in our case, we have Azure Function, but if I had a virtual machine, an app service, also Cosmos DB, right? We have a Cosmos DB, in fact, you can also add it to your solution. So let's take a look at Azure Functions. And here we have the possibility to view what it's going to cost us. Now, a few things to consider. We talked to you about regions, and we told you, you know, you need to choose a region which is close to your users. And so that's also going to impact the cost a little bit because some regions are a little bit more expensive than others. Usually, I would say that a good choice is to use one of the primary regions that we have, for example, Western US, Western Europe, things like Eastern US, of course, Northern Europe. Those are regions which tend to be a little bit cheaper. And then after that, you have the tier, and we talked about that, consumption versus premium. We'll see later what it does. And now let's talk about memory size. I'm not sure exactly how much memory my functions are going to take, but let's go on the safe side. Let's go to with 1024. And the execution time in milliseconds, let's say that each function execution is going to take 1 second, which is pretty on the safe side. 1 second is pretty long. And let's say that I have, well, let's try now. So if I have 10 executions per month, I don't pay anything. If I have 100, I don't pay anything. 1,000, okay, 10,000, 1 million. Now I start paying something at 10 million executions per month, right? Actually, it's 1 million executions per month, sorry. So here I'm going to pay 960 per month, which is really not a lot of money. Now, of course, if I go to the premium tier, then it's going to be more expensive. And then you also have to configure a little bit more things, like, for example, how many hours are you going to run it? These kind of things. So it's a little bit more complicated. And you see that the monthly cost is definitely more expensive. But on the other hand, if you have really a mission critical application where which needs to react immediately to an input, then maybe you want to go with a premium plan because it's going to be more secure for you in that matter. If I go back to consumption and switch, for example, let's select a region like Switzerland North, for example, which is where I'm located. Well, in that case, you see it doesn't make a difference, but sometimes you may find a region where it is going to be maybe a little bit more expensive. So here, I'm not sure why the pricing doesn't show up for Germany, but let's go to Australia, for example. It's still 960, so it's not very pregnant here, but there is a possibility that it's going to change a little bit. All right. Cool, so that's the pricing calculator. Let's show something else because now we want to actually create the function application that we are going to deploy, that we are going to use to deploy our functions. And to do that, I could go into the learn module and do that in the sandbox, but you know, this is the portal that we have here. But what I'm going to do is actually do that in my own subscription. Like this, I'm going to be able to keep that a little bit longer. And so how do we go to create those functions?
Once you go to the portal, maybe you can show the homepage of the public portal you want to. And then from there, you can either click on this button, create a resource, or you see that you already have some shortcuts.
Okay, so I'm going to do that. I'm just going to go and configure this extension, which is going to hide my subscription IDs, just so that you don't have bad IDs in trying to steal some secrets. And here I have actually function application directly here, right? And we did that in the first session, so we can go a little bit faster here. But I'm going to click that, and then I'm going to have to enter some information. So what do we do here?
So from there, you'll have to set up the resource group. It's like the folder where all the resources will be put in.
Okay, so I'm going to call that LearnLive 2 because I apparently already have a LearnLive. All right, so this is good.
Then you have to give your function app name a unique name across all Azure because like it will be, as it's shown, it will be used in the URL and the URL need to be unique as it will be publicly available to everyone.
Exactly. And so here, a good tip, because you don't really care about the URL here, because, I mean, you care for it in the sense that you're going to use it, but it's not going to be a URL that people are going to see in a website, etc. It's just an API URL. So what I do is that I put my initials in front, LB, Laurent Bunion, and like this, I kind of reduce the chances that my function application name is already going to be taken. And again, it has to be unique worldwide, because it is going to be a URL at the end, right?
Exactly.
Cool. Publish code or Docker container. Here we do code because we are not talking about Docker yet, but you could actually publish a Docker container directly to the function app, right?
Yes, it's also an option, but for simplicity, because what we really want here is to focus on our code, we'll use the code option.
Right. And then after that, we are going to select the runtime stack. So as we mentioned in the first session, we have .NET Core, we have Python, Java, PowerShell. Here we are going to use Node.js because we are doing some JavaScript, some TypeScript. And the version 12 sounds good to you?
Yes, it's a long-term support, so that's fine for now.
Okay, perfect. And then I can select the region. In that case, for the demo, it doesn't really matter so much. But I could say, all right, I'm going to put it in Western Europe, for example. Here, I'm going to keep it in Central US because it so happens that the Cosmos DB that I deployed is also in Central US. And so I, like this, I have everything in the same region and it's going to be a little bit less latency. By the way, to deploy the Cosmos DB, I went into the Learn module. And at some point, you have a place where you need to... you have a place where you are going to go and create the Cosmos DB. And this is here, step number, I don't know really, but here you have the set up the Cosmos DB instance, and this is where you can do that. All right, cool. So now let's go back to our function application creation. I'm going to just show the hosting. So we are going to have a storage account. This is a new storage account, like we mentioned. Don't touch it, but it's here. We have the possibility to run those on Linux or Windows. All right, I'm going to select Windows because I'm more a Windows guy, but I could totally go with Linux. In fact, we are never going to see anything about the server because we are in a serverless mode here. And then I'm going to choose the plan type. And again, this is here that you can select App Service Plan, Premium Plan, or Consumption Plan. So now that we know all that, we are going to review and create. All right, it's going to check that everything I entered is correct. And then it's going to create. I'm going to zoom out a little bit so that we see here a little bit more information on the screen. And here you can always go and check what's going on in the deployment. So if I click here on this button, it's going to show me the current deployment which is happening. And so it's just going to take a little bit time. So what is it actually doing here? Can you explain to us?
So it's writing basically all the resources that we've seen in the slide that's needed to run the functions.
Right.
So it will be creating the storage, it will be creating the service plan. Not the service plan, but the serverless backend resources. It's basically a pool of resources that will be able to sleep and be awake and scale also as you need.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here we see a few things being created. The storage account, we see here this server farm is actually the app service plan. And then we also have some insights, resources being created. Can you tell us just quickly a few words about that? What is it?
It's basically the monitoring services that's integrated to all Azure services. So mm-hmm. you can take a look, you have all the logs, you can monitor all the incoming traffic, and you can see if there's error. Basically, it's all the monitoring integrated to Azure function.
All right, that's pretty cool. So monitoring is very, very powerful, and we really monitor a lot of things, including things that you don't really worry about, such as, for example, the server on which it's running, but you can get some information about that. So now I have my function application being created. I can navigate to it. All right, it's called here, learnlive.azurewebsites.net. At the moment, there is nothing. If I go to the functions tab here, you will see that it is empty at the moment. And so last time in the first session, we have gone and clicked the add button to create a function, but here we are not going to do that. So how can we do different deployments? And for example, how can we start if we want during the test, during the development process to just try things out, for example?
If you want just to maybe try things out during the development, you can directly create function from the portal. It's mainly okay. for tests because as we did that in the first session, but you saw that it's not the most convenient way because you don't have debugging and things like that. Or you can use also the local emulator that we used in the second session to be able to mm-hmm. test everything and run locally on directly from VS Code.
Okay, so actually what I was looking for as an answer, and sorry for not being very clear, was that you can also deploy directly from Visual Studio Code, right?
Oh, sorry, you were referring to that. Okay, in that case, you can use the extension, and I think that's what you will demo right now, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of the idea. So here we have, now I'm inside my development environment, my virtual machine, and this is where I'm able to run this function locally. And so, for example, you know, we can do that quickly, like say, all right, I'm going to go here to the run tab. I'm going to attach to Node.js. So I have Node.js installed here, of course, to run everything. It's going to start things here in the terminal, as you can see. And while it is starting, can you tell us maybe a little bit more about this file, this api.http file? What does it do?
Its file is a specific to a VS Code extension that you already showed in the previous session that's called RestReent. It allows you to really quickly create and send requests to your API. You can also have multiple request type with data to do get, mm-hmm. post, put, any request you want to do using HTTP. And the good thing is that you can share this file and put it in your repository, so you can have all this kind of tests at hand and share it with your coworkers if you're multiple people in your team working on your project.
Yeah, because essentially it's just a text file with a special extension .http. So for example, I can use that to send a request. And so I'm going to make that a little bit wider on this small screen. I'm going to send a GET request to localhost 7071, which is where my functions are running locally. And we see that it does work. I get all the products from the database. So this is cool. It does work. The last product in the database is labeled here, is ID'd P010 or P010 if you want. So I can go and use another function here to create a new product, and I'm going to call it P099, for example. So let's do that just to test if it's working. And so here, just to differentiate, we have the function execution is local, but the Cosmos DB is already in the cloud, right? So it's important to understand what's going on. So here, I see that I have a 200. So apparently, it has created this product. And so if I go and get products again, if I go down at the very bottom, I should get a product P099. So our functions running locally on the local machine are working. But now we want to deploy them to this function application that I created. So how do I do things here directly in Visual Studio Code?
You can go to the Azure Function Extensions as an example. Mm-hmm.
And this is my local project, right? Those are just different subscriptions that I have access to, okay? And then?
Quite a lot in there.
Yeah, I know.
And then I think you can right-click on the project and select deploy from there.
Okay, so another possibility is to just go here. There is a button on top, right? You can deploy to function app. So I'm going to click that, and then I can select the subscription that I want to deploy to. Now, if you remember, I created the function application in my own subscription, okay? So I can actually go and click that. And then we have here all the function application that we have created. Now, what's interesting is that the one that I'm interested in actually doesn't show up. So I'm going to have to be careful because it was, called LB Learn Live, right?
Yes, I think
So I use the same name than I did previously when I rehearsed. So I can just select this function application. And now it's going to tell me, are you sure you want to deploy? And I'm going to say, yes, I'm sure I want to deploy. And then we are going to be able to follow what's going on. Now, I want to just, you know, moderate a little bit the enthusiasm here, because what we are doing here is sometimes considered a little bit of a bad practice, right? What do you think, Johan?
Yeah, exactly. Because like maybe it's really easy to misclick and, for example, deploy to not the correct subscription. As you see, you have quite a lot in there, so it's really easy to make a mistake and deploy mm-hmm. the wrong thing and basically ruin your production application.
Yeah, so it's difficult to have repeatability, really. And that's one thing that you want when you deploy to a production server. You want repeatability. And also, sometimes we need to deploy a lot, right? Because in continuous integration and continuous deployment, pretty much every time that you push something to the main branch on your GitHub account, you want this to be deployed, at least to a staging server, maybe even to the production server. So you want to have some automatism, and this is not what you have here. However, it's going to allow us to try things out during development and to see if everything is working fine, if the function application is configured properly. So it also has its utility. Now, in that case, it is going to just take a little bit more moment to finish, but I think it's going to be done soon. Why don't we go back to the slide and talk a little bit about automated deployment using GitHub Actions, and then we'll come back to the example and see where we are at. Unless, well, look at that. It was threatened and now it's completed already, right? So actually we already finished, so we can quickly go and check what happened. So let's go back here to my portal. Here, the correct portal. Now, it was empty before. The functions were empty before. If I refresh now, and if I did things properly, you should see now our four function. We have create, get products, and update products. That's pretty awesome. How can I quickly try to see if that works?
Maybe you can click on a function, like get product, for example.
Okay. So now there's a trick here, and let's see if we understand what's happening, right? Because there is a little bit of a trick. I'm going to click on code plus test, and then here I have a URL. And maybe you remember before in the first session, we had here some code and we did write some JavaScript code. Here we don't, because the code is written locally and then it's deployed as a package, but we can anyway get the URL, and because it's a get function, I'm going to try things out, and I'm just going to go and paste that into a web browser and see what's happening. And unfortunately, it doesn't work. And it's because we forgot a step, actually, exactly. On purpose, right?
We talked about before, but we definitely forgot about that. And that's also something you can easily forget about if you're not using continuous deployment, because maybe you it's really easy to do right-click deploy and forget things like we just did right now. So I think what we're missing here is the connection to the DB. We didn't set up anything regarding our local settings that you have here.
Exactly, and this is exactly a good example of why you shouldn't do things manually like that. So here we have the local settings.json, but this file was not deployed. So basically right now, the function application doesn't know where to look for the Cosmos DB. We are going to have to do that. So here I'm going to take the name of the connection string. It could be pretty much anything, but of course it has to match with the code. And here it's called like that. I'm going to copy that. And then I'm going to go to my portal. And here in my portal, in the configuration tab, this is where I can configure those application settings. Huh?
Yeah, I think you can also do that directly from VS Code, if I remember.
I believe that you can indeed. I never did that. We can try, actually. It's interesting. But I believe that you can. And I believe that you do that by going to the extension here. And then you would have to locate the function application, and here you have the application settings directly here. So you also have the possibility right here to see your application settings and then to add a new setting. So why don't we try that? So I'm going to add here the setting name. Let's press enter, and then I need to enter the value. So I'm going to go and copy that. And by the way, this value is something that you can find in the Cosmos DB in the portal. For example, you can go into the connection strings. I believe it's called keys for a Cosmos DB. And then you can see those values. You can copy them from there. So now I'm going to paste that. And so now it is creating the connection string setting in Azure directly, which means that at this point, if I go back here and refresh, let's go and refresh, and then I should see the new settings that I just created. So hopefully it is here. Here we go. And now if I go back to my functions, actually it is still here, right? And try to refresh. Hopefully, we should see some JSON. And here we go. We see some JSON, which means that our function applications are now deployed as an API on Microsoft Azure. As you can see, it's running on azurewebsites.net, and it is working fine, including the connection with the database. But like we said, a little bit too much manual work for my taste. So let's go back to the slides, and why don't you tell us more about GitHub Actions and continuous deployment?
Sure. So what's GitHub Action? We'll talk a bit about what it is and also how you can use that to configure the continuous deployment system that we were talking about using it. So Laurent, you just showed that it's not really a good idea to deploy manually because it's really easy to forget things and it's not easily reproducible. And also, if something went wrong, how can you restore the previous version that was probably working before your bad deployment? That's something that's quite hard to do if it's manual, and maybe if you didn't have the stored or maybe committed your changes, but then you lost the previous version. So it's really, for all kinds of those kind of reasons, it's really not a good idea to deploy things manually.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So we have alternatives, and so one alternative is GitHub Actions, right?
Yes, GitHub Action can actually do continuous integration and deployment, but it can also do a bit more than that. It's like a complete workflow automation system that's built in GitHub and that can react and run some actions based on any events that happen in GitHub. So it can do basically what we will be showing you just in a minute, is to deploy a new version every time a new commit is pushed to your repository. But you can also use it to do things like maybe do some triage on your backlog issues or automate your test, automate also the release of your application. You can do all kinds of things that are not only related to your code.
Yeah, it's really cool. And in my case, for example, I use it to send push notifications to my phone when something happens on my repos that I should get notified about. Typically, for example, when I commit something to main and I want a pipeline to start, I'm going to send a push notification to my phone. And I'm using just a simple HTTP message going to a function application that I wrote. So again, we go back to functions. And so in GitHub Actions, you can also send HTTP messages, for example, to a webhook when you have a commit in a specific branch. So some really cool stuff there. It's a little bit equivalent to a big product, a huge product that we have at Microsoft, another product, I should say, called Azure DevOps. Azure DevOps is still absolutely valid. You can totally use it. In fact, some features are in DevOps that you don't have in GitHub Actions and vice versa. So up to you to select. But I believe that in the next few months and years, we are going to see a lot of development in GitHub Actions and really a lot of new features there. So it's quite an exciting thing. So let's go back into the demo. And now we are going to run through setting up the GitHub Action. So the very first thing that I want to show you is that I did configure actually a repository. So I'm going to go into GitHub and I'm going to go into my own GitHub. And as you can see, I have a bunch of repos here. And so I can go and select the repos that I did. And this is the last one that I did, which is called here Sample Learn Life Series 2. And this GitHub repository is linked to the is linked to Visual Studio Code. And so here, if I go to the GitHub tab in Visual Studio Code, we see that it is under source control. So here I have some changes in this file called details.txt, which is just a file that I use. It's actually the file where I defined everything I needed to know about the Cosmos DB, but it's just like a node file for me if you want. So I'm not going to touch that. But let's go back to the GitHub repo here. And now we are going to go into the learn module because we are going to follow step by step what we need to do. Like this, you can do that at home as well. So let's go back to the summary. I'm going to jump into configure continuous deployment using GitHub Actions, all right, which is the next step that we are going to do. And then we are going to do what we need to do. So first of all, I did push the locally working API to GitHub. All right, this is what I showed you just before. We have the function application created. Now we need to get the published profile, and that's going to be something we need for later, right?
Yes, exactly.
Cool, so where do I find this file?
So for now, I think it's called, I don't see your screen right now.
Oh, okay. I think I have so, some okay, issues. I'm going to, let you know in that case. But under the overview of the function, you have here get publish profile. So it's in the overview of the function that you can go and download it. I'm going to download it to my desktop like this. I can find it for later. And really, this file is just a file. I'm going to show you what is inside this file. It can be interesting. You can open it with Notepad, for example. It's really just a big XML file with a bunch of information about our function application that we are going to use later when we configure things. Okay, so the first thing is done. We have gotten the publish profile. Next thing, we need to download it. We did that. And then we are going to go to this workflow samples page, which is a part of GitHub. So you need to know where to find that. And here you have different things that you can do. For example, deploy a Node application, which is what we have, to a Windows function application on Azure. It sounds very close from what we are doing, right?
Exactly. So you have all these kind of templates depending on which language and which is the operating system that you chose for your function. So yeah, right.
If we just go back, you see that you have different things here. And here it's really four functions, but you also have other templates for other things, for example, app service or things like that. So let's go to the Node on Windows. I'm going to go to the Row tab so that I see the whole thing. And then I'm going to copy that because I will need it later. All right, so now this is done. Let's go back to here to the module. And now I'm going to navigate to my Fortrait repository and select actions from the top menu. So let's do that. This is my repository. Let's go to actions. And here, this is where you can really manage your actions, right? And create also a new one. And again, you have some templates here. So do we want to use one of those templates? Not really, right? Because we have some text already, some file, right?
Yeah, I think you have an option to say that you already have your own workflow. Yes, exactly that one.
Yeah, so I'm going to click that, right? Set up a workflow yourself. And so now we are going to do a few things. The first thing I'm going to do is rename that with a better name. I'm going to say this is a deploy to Azure. And then we have this extension YML. Can you tell us more about what this is? What is YML and what does it stand for?
So it stands for
YML, or what was it?
Yeah, it's YAML. It's like another markup language that you can show an example just below. It's like an easy to read for humans language to when you want to configure things, and that's what we use to describe the workflow and the action that you want to do, depending on the various events. In that case, it's when a new code is pushed to the repository, new commits are pushed. Then you can describe all the jobs, all the actions, all the steps you want to run.
Okay, so remember I have something in my clipboard, right? I have copied something. I'm going to select everything here, and then I'm going to replace with what I had in the clipboard. And so now we can take a quick look on the content of this file. So we have a name, all right? That's kind of self-explaining. And then we have on, which specifies basically when this is going to be triggered. And here we see that we have on push. Every time we push something, something's going to happen, right?
Exactly. That's what we want.
Cool. So can we refine that a little bit? Like, can we say only when I push to the main branch, for example?
Yes, you can specify the name of a branch. You can specify if it's only for your code or for pull request. You can add a lot of filters. You can have a very good precision of the kind of event you want to trigger your workflow from, and to restrict it to some branches or to some people.
Oh, that's really cool. So you can do that. And then after that, you have a few parameters here that we are going to modify and set up properly. And we have some jobs. And so the jobs, we see that we are going to build things on Windows. So it means that in the background, it's going to start a VM and do some build operations, right? And then we have some steps, different steps, checking out the main branch. And after that, we are going to set up the Node version. We are going to resolve the project dependencies using NPM, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, everything is done. And then we have the actual push to the Azure function, which is defined here. So you can also go and edit this file manually if you want. YAML is a little bit a difficult format. For those of you who never did YAML, what should you pay attention? I think spaces have a special importance here, right?
Yeah, exactly. Spaces and the indentation is really important in YAML, and it's easy to make mistakes. I think that's why it was best to just copy paste the template instead of writing it from scratch.
Right, and also you have some help here. So if you go to the marketplace, you have different actions that you can just put into your template. So there is some help. But again, be a little bit careful here. If you are not sure about what you're doing, follow the steps really precisely. So the first thing we are going to do here is configure this environment variable Azure Function App name. So I need the function application name, which is LB Learn Live. So I'm going to take that here. And remember, this is a unique name, right? So we can actually change that here, all right? And then after that, Azure Function App Package Pass, can you remind me what this does?
Basically, it tells the action where to find the code for your project. So okay. By default, it finds it in the root directory. So maybe if you have multiple code from your project, like the client and things like that, you want to change it a bit.
Oh, it's a good point. So if you have multiple folders, so here in that case, I have everything pretty much in the root. So I can just put a dot and I don't need to change that. And then the node version, now it's funny because here it says 10, but I seem to remember something about 12 LTS, right?
Yeah, I think we should use the same version that we use in the runtime just to be on the safe side.
Okay, so I'm changing that to 12. And now it says start commit. Now that's interesting because it means that this file is going to be committed to my repo?
Exactly.
Huh, okay, that's interesting. So let's try that. I'm just going to go back quickly here to make sure that I didn't forget anything. So we did rename, we pasted the workflow, we modified here, we modified the node version. Now I can click on start commit. So let's do that. And of course, I'm going to have to enter here a commit. So create deploy. I'm going to just write.
Leave the default one if you're happy with what's already written here.
Okay, well, yeah, sure, but you can also change it or you can just remove it, that's okay. And then I'm going to commit directly to my main branch. So let's do that, commit the file. Okay, the file has been committed and it has been committed into a special folder, right?
As yes, I can exactly, see with a .github, in the .github folder, that means it's special files that are meant to be only read by GitHub.
Ah, okay, this is cool. So now we have that, which means that if I understand properly, if I go back into Visual Studio Code, and let's take a look here, this file is not here. I don't have a .github folder, but if I synchronize, I should probably see it. So let's try that, right? I'm going to go to the GitHub tab, and then I'm going to say I want to synchronize. So let's do that. And after a very short wait, we should see here that we have now a gitignore with a very cute little icon. It's actually a git icon. No, sorry, gitignore. What do I say? I don't want gitignore. I want the, what is it called already? Git.
But I don't GitHub see
folder.
It.
Okay.
Are you sure it's the same repo?
Yes, it is the same repo. Yes, absolutely. So let's try again. Refresh. Yeah, I didn't see it either. So maybe I just want to show too many things here. It doesn't seem to be working. I'm going to go and try and refresh here because I suspect that maybe Visual Studio Code doesn't show it, but I believe it does. So here I have create deploy to azure.yaml, okay? So let's go back here. And now I have the GitHub folder. So I think there was just a small synchronization issue. But the cool thing is that you can also, that's what I wanted to show, you can also edit this YAML file directly in Visual Studio Code if you want. And then when you push that to your GitHub repository, immediately the changes are going to be taken in account. And the next time that you have a workflow starting, then it's going to be taken care of. So it's a good workflow, really. You don't need to edit that in the GitHub editor in your web browser. You can do that also in Visual Studio Code here. Cool. So now we should probably try and see if it works, right? What do you think?
Yes.
Cool. So I happen to have this file. Now, this file is really nothing special, but it is something that I can commit. So why don't we do that? I'm going to take it and just commit it directly. So I'm going to say, all right, I want to stage the changes. All right. Now those are changes. I'm going to commit. I'm going to say trying the...
Are you sure isn't there like some secret in this file?
You know, it's a good point. I believe I have some secrets in here. Actually, it's a great point. So I'm going to remove it. I'm not going to commit that. Instead, why don't I do something? Because I will need to do that anyway. I can here change here, get products, and I'm going to say get products local. So I'm going to change my api.http. This is way better. And what I'm going to need here is the URL of the function application, which is here. So I'm going to take that, and then I'm going to prepare basically this file so that later if I click, and actually we can try now, right? If I click here on the send request, it should work, and we see that it does work. So my function application worked. So now I haven't changed in HTTP, in my API.http thing. I'm going to stage that one only. I'm not going to check in to commit my, my thing.
Sorry to interrupt you, but maybe you can just we can just take a look right now at the actions, because I think it has already been run, and you can always keep the change to update it later.
Okay, yeah, cool. So let's go to this here. And so if I go into actions, that's where we see things. It says create deploy to Azure.yaml. However, it seems to have failed, right? So did we forget something? Probably we did.
Yes, because I don't remember that we set up like the secrets. So the action that's is correct. Actually able to deploy to your Azure account.
That is correct. And so when I did the start commit, it does run the action, but it is failing. So we need to do that. And this is actually already, this is actually described here, right? So in the top menu, I need to switch to settings. Let's do that. So I'm going to go to settings here. All right. And then after that, here I have secrets. And those secrets are things that you can save for that particular repo. And what do I need to do that? I need to add a new secret named Azure Function App Publish Profile. Ah, we go back to the publish profile that we downloaded before, right? So exactly. Let's go new secret. All right. And what do I need to put here?
Well, I think you need to put the content of this publish profile that you just downloaded from Azure.
Exactly. So let's go back to that. This is big XML file that we have here. And then if I paste that and add the secret, and so this publish profile is establishing the link between GitHub and my Azure Function application, because of course, at this point, we need to also allow GitHub to publish to the function application. So now this is done. So now at this point, if I go back to the action and actually do something, now we can actually test the automation. So let's go here to my thing. I have this file, HTTP API. I'm going to say, trying the automated deployment. All right, let's commit that. Boom, let's synchronize. And now if I go here to my actions and refresh. And refresh. Oh, did I push? I'm not sure if I pushed. I think I...
It's not pushed.
Yeah, I didn't push. I just clicked on refresh. That's the opposite direction, right?
You click pull, no, not push. No, you can also synchronize directly from the status bar in the bottom if you want a shortcut.
But I believe I clicked push. I think it's okay now. So let's go here.
I still see the change not pushed in the status bar. That's why I said that.
Okay. So I believe you. Let's go back. Pull push. Oh, yeah, I believe you're right. Okay, push. I shouldn't doubt you. I don't know why. You're the expert, right? Okay.
I mean, sometimes.
We have 0-0. We have 0-0, so that should be okay. All right, let's go back. Finally, I can refresh. Actually, I didn't need to refresh. It automatically refreshed. It says trying the automated deployment, and we see that it's yellow, which means that something's happening. And if I click here, you can see the job in progress. You can click on build and deploy, and then you can see what's going on and what's going to happen. And really step by step, you can see what it is doing in this console. So you can really follow as you want. But really, most of the time, you don't even need to do that because you know that the automated deployment is just going to push everything. So let's go back to the slides because we want to advance a little bit, because we have one last thing to solve before we actually use this function application in the website. So what is that? Suspense. Let's go here to the slides and talk about this CORS. What can you tell us about that?
CRS. So CORS stands for Cross Origin Resource Chain. It's a security relaxation mechanism. So you're able to access JavaScript. You can, in our case, it's accessing the calling the API from a different origin, so a different URL than the one that is running the website. So maybe just to illustrate what we are talking about, you can try running the website with the API we already deployed to see what's the issue here.
Okay, sure, let's do that. Why not? So I'm going to go back here into my VM, and I have another Visual Studio Code here, which is where I open the web application this time, the Angular application. And inside the Angular application, I need to change here on the data client.ts, I need to change the base API location, which is the location of my Azure function, right? So let's go and take that here. So I'm going to go inside my portal, and here I have the URL of my function. This is a base URL of my function application, to be totally exact. And so now if I go here, I can replace, all right? Let's save that. And now we can try to run the website. So I imagine that it works the same, right? It's an Angular website, but I can also click it here. Or what should I do, actually? I don't see the famous bar.
I think
there is a way to run from the terminal, right?
Yeah. Did you make npm start in the terminal?
No, that's the thing, right? That's because I'm totally bad with npm and Angular and all that. So you need to run me through that, right? So here I need to type npm start. Is that correct?
Yes. I think just cut the task that is already running. Right. Now, if you type npm start, it will start the application locally using a development server that will run exactly through your code.
Okay. So here we have the website running locally on this machine, which is going to call the function which is on Azure, which is going to call the Cosmos DB on Azure. So we have a lot in Azure, but we still have here the website in running locally. And once this is done compiling and basically restoring everything, we are going to get a link that we can execute in the web browser, right? So this is a link here. Let's try that. Okay, I have back to school welcome. This is great. Let's go to products. And nothing's happening, so how can I debug that?
Maybe you should open the development tools. You can do that from the browser
F12,
menu,
right?
F12, I think.
Yeah, and then we see that we have tons of errors, right? We have quite a lot of things. Error name not resolved. That's interesting. What's going on here?
You can also move to the network tab to see maybe a bit more information about the error.
Okay, so I need to quickly refresh here to see what's going on. All right. Okay, we have something going on here. Okay, yes. Something seems wrong, huh?
Yes, fails to load the data. Yes, I see that the URL might be a bit... I think I know. It's not the error that we are looking for because you forgot to add the trailing slash. As you see, it's telling the error. It's telling that basically you can't find the URL. And I see that there's no slash between net and product.
So we need to be really, really super careful about what we are doing here. So let's go back.
Don't kill anything because it will automatically reload. Just add a trailing slash to this URL.
Okay, done.
It
reloads. So now I'm going to refresh. All right. Oh, yeah, it does look different. And now this time I have something which looks a little bit different here, right? It says...
Yeah, it's saying fake, basically.
Yeah, it's very small on this 1920 times 1080 screen. But basically, it tells me that there is an error because it has been blocked by CORS, by CORS policy. So now we have the error. We are exactly where we wanted to go. We have the error that we need to fix. So how do we fix it? Or rather, should we go back to the slides first and then we fix it?
Yes, exactly. I think we should go back to the slide to explain a bit what CORS is about.
All right, let's do that. So what is CORS and how does it work and why is it not working at that point?
Exactly. So basically, every time you request some data from your browser, You make a request to the server, and the response will be sent to your browser, and the browser will determine if he wants to actually read this data. So if you're trying to load data that has not the same URL as the one you were loading the HTTP from, that's our case, because your web server running the Angular application is localhost, and you're trying to access some data that is on a different URL running in Azure. So basically, what the browser does is blocking the request because it doesn't trust it. Maybe mm-hmm. there's malicious code in there, and by default, it's called same origin policy. It's a security mechanism that block these resources. I think it's on the next slide, if you can move on.
Yep, absolutely. I was actually checking the chat because there are some good points on the chat about choosing Ubuntu versus Windows. We decided to choose Windows, not because we are particularly fan of Windows, but it was just what we chose. We could totally choose Ubuntu instead, like you mentioned, or rather Linux. It's just called Linux in the portal. That would work. And also just a shout out to JLiter, who said you are missing a slash in the URL. Thank you so much for noticing that. Of course, after that, it depends on what the code is doing. But yeah, so next slide, browsers enforce the same origin policy. This is the important point, right?
Yes, exactly. That's why our request was blocked, because the URL we were trying to load data from our API isn't the same from the one we were loading the HTML, JavaScript, basically our Angular application.
Okay, that's interesting.
So basically, if you're trying to run anything that's from the different URL, the browser will block that. But there's a mechanism that's called cross-origin resource sharing, CORS for short. Okay. That allows you to make exceptions for specific domains. You can specify that, for example, if you're trying to run your function locally using these parameters that you can put in the local settings, or you can also specify that in the Azure portal. Basically, it's an exception list to allow specific domains to call your API from a different domain. And okay. That's why it's called CORS. And what it will do, basically, if you set these settings to Azure Function, it adds some special headers. I think it was in a few slides back ago to say that, okay, in this particular HTTP request, in the response, you have a specific header that says all these URLs are allowed to request this data. Like it's exactly like it's shown on the screen. It's called access control origin. It's a special header that tells the browser, okay, this is safe to load this data.
All right, and so this is based on a lot of conventions, basically, and all the browsers, at least, you know, the usual disclaimer, all the modern browsers implement that and allow you to do that. So this is pretty cool. So what does it mean for us, and what do we need to do so that our website can actually work, right? We need to go and modify this local settings.json, or is there another way to do that?
We can do that directly in the Azure portal, because what really matters here is our deployed version.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Like this, we don't need to redeploy, right? So I'm just checking the slides to see if we have something else. We can maybe do it, and then after that we'll come back and then we'll ask a question to our viewers. So let's go into the Azure portal, and this Azure portal is located here. And so somewhere I would have something, right? Do you know where it is and where can I find it?
I think you can find something called CORS, yes, in there.
Okay, well, simple. I could also have simply search, right, for CORS and then filter it. All right, so now what can I do here, and what should I modify?
You can see just below you have a list of allowed origin. So what you can do is add, for example, the localhost domain in there. So you can just call the function from your local development server.
Okay, so I'm sorry, what do I need to put here? Oh, the localhost. Simply localhost,
yes.
You mean?
Yeah, you can add HTTP, all the things for localhost. Okay. You can also specify a port if you need, or allow all the ports. In our case, I was running on port. Yeah. Sorry.
I think it was 4,600, I believe, or yeah. No?
200.
4,200. Okay, so 4,200, all right? And then I can save. But now, of course, it means that anybody who's running a website on localhost 4,200 can access it, right?
Actually, that's exactly it.
Okay, that's interesting. So maybe not something that you want to leave in production, right? But here it's going to allow us to try things out. And so if I go back now to my website, I should be able, since this was changed in the function application, I should be able to just refresh that. And hopefully, after a short while, if everything goes well, and I can totally press F12 to make it even more interesting. It's replied with 404. Interesting. So something happened here, but it's not the same error than before. So what is it trying to call? It's trying to call HTTPS LB Learn Live Azure Websites.net products. That should actually work, I believe.
Yeah, maybe you can just retry.
Oh, I know why. It's because we miss API. We miss such API, you see? So it means that the code here didn't add the API. So we probably need here to add /API/, I guess.
Exactly.
Let's save that. Compiled, refresh. All right. So here's all the developer tools. Very, very precious. And now you can see that it is actually working. So this is cool because we have managed to do that. And not only that, but this time the administration should work, right? So let's try seeing that.
I also want to shout out to our viewers because they caught the errors actually before that we thought about it.
This is amazing. So anyway, actually the update function didn't quite work yet because we have another thing. But if you go and deploy it yourself, it should work. So it's also going to allow you to here modify things in the product as well as create new products. So this is pretty cool. It seems to be working fine, which means that at this point, we could actually go and deploy the website to, for example, a static website, static web account on Azure. And then you would just have to update the CORS, the calls setting to make it good. So one good question, I guess, because this is a security setting, right? And so The big question and the poll that we can take with our dear viewers who are really attentive, apparently, when we add the core setting, do we increase or decrease security? What do you think? Does it increase security or decrease security? What do you see here?
I think we leave some time to the viewers to answer that.
Yeah, let's give a little bit of time. I see one user says one. He says it increased security, loss algorithm, decreased security. I see that you are quite active and you seem to have a good grasp of what's going on here. In fact, it does decrease security. And so let us explain that. It's a little bit a tricky question indeed. CORS calls, the mechanism is going to increase security because it tells the web browser accept request only from specific website. But every time you add a call setting inside your function application, you're going to decrease a little bit because you're going to add more possibilities for your service to be called. And so you're going to decrease a little bit the security of the service. So I get the rule of thumb here is to say, put in your call setting only the strict minimums that you need. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Don't do what was shown, I think, in the slide earlier. Don't use like the wildcard because that means that everybody can call your function and probably that's not what you want.
Exactly. You don't want a wildcard there because wildcard means this is open for everybody. You want to be as specific as you can be. And that's kind of a good principle of security. Try to reduce the attack surface as much as you can. Every time you add a new website into your core setting, it's going to increase the possible attack surface, I would say. All right. So this is a good poll. So series summary, let's run through that a little bit and quickly because we have something like 10 minutes left, I guess, or 7 minutes left. So what did we do in session one? Quickly, can you remind us?
Sure. So in the first session, what we did is go through our scenario and explain what were our needs. And then based on that, choose the optimal Azure service plan for that. Actually, it's not the service plan, it's the Azure service that we wanted to do that. That's how we ended up choosing Azure Functions. And
great point. And because I'm very proactive, I'm going to fix it on the slide. like this, it will be fixed for next time. Very cool.
All right, so that's what we did, yeah? The second session, what we did is set up everything we needed in VS Code for local development. And then we also started to implement our API without having to push anything to the cloud. And we started to create all the HTTP endpoints that we needed, mostly the GET, REST, and update endpoints. And then we saw how to connect all those endpoints to Cosmos DB database. So we are able to push and read data from a real database. And also we saw and we talked a bit about security in the last session, especially to protect the API from unwanted calls during the development. Because if we are talking about security, about production, that would mean need a lot more time in session because that's a really an extensive subject.
Let's take just a minute here to show something, because if you remember in the last session, we actually configured to be function, right? To have a code. Yeah. And you can in fact see that. So if I go back to my function application in the functions here, and I go, for example, to get product, and I get the function URL. Let's go in code and test. And get the URL for this, click on that. And then if I paste that here, you see there is this question mark code, and then there is a huge, a relatively big, let's say, line, and this is exactly the code. And so if we had set up anonymous, you would have a URL which looks like that. But here we didn't set anonymous, we said, it has to be a function, and so you need to pass the function code. Two ways to pass the function code, either in the URL using a question mark, using a query, or you can do also a special header, which like this hide things a little bit more and then pass that to the function. More about that in the documentation. We are almost at the end, so we are not going to go in the detail here, but this is exactly what we did last time, and now that we push to deployment, we see that it is working, so that's cool.
Exactly, and in this session, actually, do you want to go on or?
Well, actually, this time we did we chose the optimal Azure service plan. We did configure GitHub Actions, right? And we saw that it did actually work and push the changes. And we configured cores, and we understood what cores is doing as well. So those four sessions are pretty much complete. We have gone through the whole deployment. And what would you say, is it close to practice? I believe it was kind of representative of a real project, maybe a little bit simplified, but we actually have some pretty complex interactions at play here, right?
Exactly. And what we have built basically is like a really usable API for our Angular application. Maybe the example were quite simple, but I think, yes, as you said, it's quite representative of what would be used in a real business scenario, the one we chose at least. So you can find also all the resources, all the code that Laurent shown in this GitHub repository. You can practice and redo every steps that we shown in the previous session. And in this one, following the URL to the learn module, there's the documentation for everything if you want to try rebuilding this application from scratch on your side.
Again, serverless September. Remember, it's September. It's the time for serverless. And it's not just about beautiful red leaves, but it's also about learning about serverless. So we have tons of events, streams, videos, articles, and all kinds of things. If you go to this ak.ms, this is where you can find it. If you want to contact us, you know, Johan is Cinedide on Twitter. I'm El Bunio on Twitter. And our DMs are open. So if you have a problem that you don't want to expose to the public, but just talk to us privately, you can do that as well. If you want to tell us that you love this session, you can do that. If you loved it, my name is Laurent Bunio. If you didn't like it, my name is Rob Gibbons. Don't forget that. just kidding, but really thank you so much to also the moderators, Rene and Chris, who did a fantastic job moderating the questions and saying hi. Rob Gibbons is saying hi now. We also have another event that we can mention. It's here, the Create Serverless or MS Create. What is that? Can you tell us quickly in like 2 minutes what it is?
Sure, it will be like the end for the end of a 7th September event series. It's like a full event I think that will spawn on a few hours, 4 hours, if I remember well. It's a collection of talks that will happen on the end of September that will be all about serverless. That will be like amazing people from our community that will give you speech about all the best practices to build serverless application. So really don't miss it. It's free and you can go to ak.ms/createserverless to know more about all the speakers and all the talks that you will hear during this event.
Yeah, I see a lot of known faces here, people like Simona, Chris, Jeff Holland, who is actually one of the lead in the serverless function project. Anthony Chu is working on the serverless project. Burke Holland is basically, I think he invented JavaScript or something. I don't know. I see him everywhere. Donna Sarkar, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of great speakers. Make sure to check it out. We are at the end of this presentation. Do you have any final word, Johan, to share with us?
Yeah, I have a final word, and I forgot about a little surprise that I had planned just for the deployment when it was working. So I'll try to do that now. And here you should see that just for the end. I have a background just for the colors of Azure Function because I really like these services, and I really enjoyed doing all these sessions with you, Laurent.
This is very beautiful. Thank you so much for your expertise. It was really absolutely fantastic. I did learn a lot because I'm not a TypeScript or JavaScript or a Node.js person. Thank you so much, René, for preparing this content, the whole Learn team. And this is pretty cool. I'm going to stop sharing my screen so that you see me a little bit clearer, right? Like this, we have a little bit less bandwidth. So thank you so much for attending, and hopefully it was useful for you. Please give us feedback because we want to know what we can do better for next time. And we hope to see you very soon again in another series of live event at Microsoft Learn. Thank you for watching and have a wonderful weekend.